Dr. Barry, like a host of Inside Cosmetic Surgery Today, WebTalkRadio.net, your number one source for cosmetic surgery today. This is the place you can find information you really can find nowhere else. The newest, the best, the most innovative cosmetic surgery procedures, stuff that you really need to know about if you're thinking of getting anything done for your cosmetic surgery. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about something we've done before, but something that really has changed markedly over the last couple of years. And that's talking about facial rejuvenation with fat transfer. Facial rejuvenation is a big procedure for most people, but fat transfer is something they really haven't talked about or maybe even thought about. Why is this the case? Well, first of all, there are a lot of good ways to augment the face. In the old days, it used to be the facelift. The facelift used to be the procedure that used to be done, bar none. It used to be the number one procedure for lifting the face. The problems with it were quite astronomical. The problem is it didn't necessarily leave a person looking normal. It made them look pulled. It made them looked just not quite right. Well, what's happened with all this is that things have changed, and now we realize the number one problem with the facial features as we get older is lack of volume. The face loses volume, so we have to put volume back. It's not rocket scientists, it's not, but it is new to a lot of us. I've been using fillers for quite a long time with some excellent results, but, you know, it's still something that a lot of people haven't heard about. So I have a great friend of mine, Fred Coville, from Lynnwood, New Jersey, who will be talking about this. Fred, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Barry. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's always my pleasure to have you on. Now, when did this thinking about facial rejuvenation really start?
Well, you know, it's funny. You talked about the facelift. You talked about what we used to do in the old days. And you're absolutely right. When I did my training way back, way back, I mean, I finished in 1990, so we're talking about the late 80s that I was training. I remember doing these facelifts and learning how to do facelifts. And I remember one of my senior plastic surgeons, who was a great guy, who's passed away now, Bernie Simon, and he was an elderly surgeon. And I remember operating on a face with him, and he said, you know, if they didn't pay us so much money for this operation, I don't think any of us would do it. The reason was it was not a well-designed operation in terms of, yes, it made people look tighter, but not necessarily younger. It took away a lot of naturalness about the way people look, and it was very often easily picked out in the crowd. And then it started probably in the late, 1998, 1999, people like Sidney Coleman in New York started thinking about how to transfer fat, was playing around with the idea. And then probably Bill Little out of Washington, D.C. was one of the first that really started to describe the artistry of putting volume into a face and really about the three-dimensional aspect of a face. And that's really what kicked it off. So we're really
talking
great. About
the early
part of the
millennium. Yeah, I remember the seminal work of Sidney Coleman when he started talking about this and how he was perceived as being crazy talking about using fat.
Sure.
I mean, a large part of the medical profession really turned their nose up at him.
Yeah, well, I think what that was and what we've since learned, and believe me, there are still a lot of people that have come into this kicking and screaming, and some people finally have, you know, they realize that they have to get on board or they're going to be left behind. But the point of it is that the old way people would inject fat was simply to take it out, you know, when you did your liposuction and shoot it back in somewhere, and it just didn't work. What Sidney first described was that if you laid the fat in what he used to call little parcels, in other words, make sure that every little piece of fat had its own little circulation around it, then you could get it to take, almost like sowing a field. Each seed needed to have its nourishment. But if you just put a glob of fat there, the fat that was in the center of that glob had no chance of getting any blood, so it would die. So Sydney
and
described
this way of
doing it.
I think that is very, very important, Fred. I think that was the key thinking that made a difference. But then he also talked about putting the fat in different planes, it also around the muscle, deep down, which was pretty radical as well back then.
Right, right. And I think, you know, once he sort of, and believe me, I was around and I saw some of those early patients, and not every one of them, you know, looks like the patients that we do today, but he was right. You could get this fat to survive, and when you did, you realized that patients looked a lot better, and there, you know, then people started to notice that, you know, something's happening with their skin as well. It seems like, you know, their skin texture is improving. But then Bill Little came around, and he wrote a couple of articles which really clarified, I think, for people how beauty really was about this volume filling, especially in the mid-phase. And when we realized that, we combined, you know, the what our goals were. We really defined our goals better. We looked at the techniques, and then people got serious about how do we do this? How do we do it better? How do we do it more reliably? And I think we're getting there. It's not perfect, but it's so incredible the power of this right now that you know, a facelift without fat is sort of you know, it's like strawberry shortcake without the strawberries.
I think that what's changed is the primary procedure is filling now. The second procedure is the lifting. Whereas before, the primary procedure used to be the lifting, and the secondary procedure used to be the filling.
Yeah, I think that's true, and I also think that, in fairness, the facelift itself has changed, where we used to depend on hanging the face by the skin, basically, you know, pulling your skin as tight as you could. We realized that that was really not the way to rejuvenate the face. It didn't look very good, or it didn't look as good as it could, and so we now lift it from below, but still, we do a lot of the work with filling the volume. And as a matter of fact, even now, I do less brow lifts than I used to. The same thing. I mean, if you look at an aging eye, a lot of the face is actually deflated, especially around the eye. It's not necessarily sagging. It's actually empty. So when you place that fat very carefully, and it's sort of an advanced technique, but you can lay that fat in and around the upper brow, in and around the lower lids, and you can create a very youthful look without taking out skin. So it's a beautiful procedure if done correctly. And unfortunately, most of us have plenty of fat to play with. So there's no shortage of donor material.
The other thing that's changed is we've learned how to handle that material better. You know, when we take it out, we treat it very gently. We don't try to break it. We don't try to do it. We treat it as a living, breathing material so that when we put it back in, it really does a better job that way.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Yes, and of course, there's different ways to do it, but you're absolutely right. People now treat it as if it's a graft, as if you were, you know, cardiac surgeons always knew how to treat a heart when they transplanted it. We were sort of a little bit rough with fat, thinking that you could just plant it any way you wanted. But we do treat it very differently, and I think the techniques have gotten more and more sophisticated. Some people mix it with certain things, some people wash it, but the idea is that you really just want pure fat cells to take in a new place. And whether or not they bring with it growth factors or other components is still, we're still looking at all that. And I think that this is a young aspect of what we do, a young science that is evolving every day.
I think that's huge, and I think those are very important concepts. Like, when I take fat out, I don't even – when I first started doing it, the state of the art was to centrifuge the fat, to get all the stuff out. I don't do that any longer. I take it out either by hand or by machine and really treat it very delicately. I don't even want the fact that a centrifuge will damage it. Now, that may be or may not be your case, Fred.
Yeah, I transfer fat all over the place. I tend to treat fat that I put in the face a little different than face fat that I use in the body, just because of the sheer volume. So if I do a buttock augmentation, which is a very popular procedure down here, as a matter of fact, I call it the Jersey Shore butt lift, but as opposed to the Brazilian butt lift. But you know, if I put fat into a buttock, there's just so much that you have to have to transfer, that I probably don't treat it exactly the same way with, I do with the face. There is a
and
lot
I agree
less
with
room
you that
forever.
There is a huge
yeah.
difference, because we do realize when we put it into the buttock, we're going to lose parts. We're trying to put
right.
in huge volumes, and if we lose 20 or 30 or 50%, it's not a great deal, because we put so much in. In the face,
right.
we're putting minuscule amounts to that, so we really want to preserve all of it if we can.
Right. You want every single one of those fat cells to survive, and it makes it there's less margin for error. So, yes, we tend to be super, super cautious with the fat that we put in the face. I guess the one thing that I've learned over the last several years, the more I do of this procedure, is that I used to be a little too conservative with the amount of fat I put in, because I always was afraid of overdoing it. But if it's done in the right place and you really get the technique down, you do require a bit of fat, and it really is amazing how much volume we lost. If any of us just take a look at a picture of yourself, you know, from 10, 15 years ago, and if you're honest with yourself, the first thing that will jump out at you is not that you have less sagging skin, but how full your face looked. You know, you almost feel like, my God, I just sort of, it's like somebody punctured the balloon and deflated me. So so really it does take a lot of volume. So I tend to put in a lot more now than I used to, especially in the mid-face. And I'm, you know, just happier and happier with the results. And so are my patients. They just really, they love the results. They're surprised because they don't recognize it in themselves. It's not something that when you look in the mirror, you say to yourself, God, I've lost volume. You just think something's wrong. My eyes look tired. I think I have jowls, or you think there's something else. But what it really is, for the most part, is that you've deflated a little bit. And
the other thing, another area I use fat in addition to the face and the buttock, I use it for breast augmentation. And borrowing a page from where we were doing breast reconstruction post mastectomy, I have developed this technique with Dr. D.K. Hoffman from Stanford. We take very small volumes of fat, limiting it to 100 cc's per breast per procedure, and putting it just below the skin. So not into the breast tissue itself, where it can cause nodules and inflammatory results, and put it in very, very evenly to get the best results. We call this procedure SVELT, small volume serial elective lipotransfer, and it's worked out great. We've got about 130 patients under our belt. The key is to do it serially. And small volume.
How long do you wait between those procedures?
About 4 to 6 weeks. We don't like to leave it a lot, because if I've harvested enough fat, I want to try and use it up while still fresh enough. I don't like to use a lot of old fat that's been frozen.
Right, I'm not a big fan of using frozen fat, but that's a wonderful idea, and it does get, you know, sort of avoid some of the issues that some people, you know, are worried about, as far as, like you said, the nodules and things that, you know, they may not show up on a mammogram as being something, but they certainly are disconcerting to a woman who's examining her breast and she feels a little bump from a fat injection. There's no way of her knowing whether it's a bump from a fat injection or something more serious. So
exactly.
So that's a nice little idea.
The good thing is, if there's a lump or bump here, it's very superficial as well.
Right,
it's very easy to get at. So
right,
if it does cause a problem, it's very easy to access. It's very easy to visualize, both on MRI or on ultrasound. So it becomes a whole different ball game than if you put it down deep into the breast tissue. I think the breast tissue doing that is a fool's paradise for doing something like that.
Sure, sure. I think the take home with this is that fat is sort of fat is the new black. It's you know, we've sort of come around. We used to just toss it away. It's a wonderful tissue that you can work with, but it really does take a certain amount of expertise and care and handling, as you said. I think for the listener, one of the most important things he or she can do is on, you know, make sure that the physician she's going to or he's going to really understands how to handle the fat and doesn't just treat it, you know, like it's a filler, because fillers can be just shot in and fat is not like that. So there are millions of thousands of applications for fat, and I think they're only expanding. But it really does require a bit of finesse, don't you think?
I think it requires a huge amount of finesse. But, you know, it's true of all surgical procedures, Fred. The best indication of how a surgical procedure is going to do is your choice of a qualified doctor. And if you choose somebody that really knows their stuff, you're likely going to get some good results. If you don't, you're likely going to not be happy with it. And it's partly due to the skill of the doctor, but it's also the training, the number of cases they do, and their perception of the procedure, where they take care of accuracy. You know, I find it's the small differences that make all the difference in a procedure.
It is. It with everything, and I really believe that. I think, you know, for the most part, if you're a discerning you know, client, if you're a discerning patient, you get a sense of how a surgeon sort of handles himself, talks to you about the procedure, whether they're excited about it, whether they're bored by it, whether, you know, how they just carry themselves. You just get a sense of their willingness to pay attention to detail. And those things are important in any sort of surgery. But I think when we're talking about, you know, your face, when you talk about cosmetic procedures, you know, this things can go wrong. You know, unfortunately, things can go wrong. So, you know, one of my old professors years ago when I was in general surgery, you know, would say, you know, you find a great surgeon not always just because of the great results they can get, but also for their ability to get you out of trouble. And, you know, someone who...
Absolutely.
Sure, the ones who know, you know, the procedures inside and out can get you out of trouble.
And avoid the trouble, too, because they've been there. They know what's coming up down the road.
Exactly.
This is Dr. Barry Leica. I'm talking with Dr. Fred Colville today about some of the newer procedures in cosmetic surgery. Well, we just talked about fat transfer, which is a growing procedure. But now I want to take a minute and turn this over to another procedure that's getting to be very, very popular. It's called the mummy makeover. You know, when a woman's gone through delivery and pregnancies, their body is not quite the same what it used to be. And it's a pity because a really vital person has now changed. The body's changed, and the body just doesn't respond the way that it used to. Now, why that's so important is because there are things that can be done with that body, surgically and otherwise, to make it come back the way it was. So if a person is feeling inhibited or feeling bad about themselves because the changes that have been wrought, there are a lot that can be done, and that can be done with the breasts, that can be done with the abdomen, that can be done with the stretch marks, which is a big change in thinking from what it was a few years ago. What's your take on that, Fred?
Well, I think, again, Barry, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I see a lot of women that have had children, and it's a beautiful experience. And I have young kids. I have a 5 and a 7-year-old, so I it's very fresh to me, yeah, the process, you know. But I think most women absolutely don't even appreciate how much of a toll pregnancy can take on your body. It really takes a while for you to fully recover. There are metabolic changes that happen and things that happen with ligaments and joints just in the way of a normal pregnancy. So there is a big change in your body, and then afterwards you tend to be nurturing your child, at least for the first year, almost nonstop. You don't get any sleep. So that's taking an even greater toll on your body. At a time when you're already weak from the pregnancy, you're asked to perform at a level that most of us have never had to perform in our lives. So, pregnancy and childbearing can be exhausting things, and it does take its toll on your body in terms of, you know, changes in your skin, in terms of changes in the texture of things, in terms of where things are, you know, things fall, fat comes and goes in different places. So women, when it's all said and done, they look in the mirror and they say, my God, you know, this isn't the young girl, because most women are very young when they have a kid. This isn't the same body I just had a year ago. you know, what can I do? And they get very discouraged.
When you talk about a mummy makeover, what are the big procedures you do to restore that mummy back to the way she used to be?
I think a lot of the times the biggest thing that people come from that where they feel the most distress is are their breasts. Because they used to be young and perky, then they've either breastfed or even if they haven't, the ligaments that support the breast have stretched. So they sort of have deflated, almost like we talked about with the face, but they deflate in a very different way. So the position of the nipple and the amount of breast tissue that sort of sinks below the horizon, I like to call it, you know, it just isn't the same, and they've lost a lot of volume. So they come in and they want their breasts to look like they used to. Then there is the other side effects, especially depending on how much weight they've gained or how good their skin was to start. Their belly, the muscles of your belly have spread apart, and no amount of sit-ups can fully bring that back. Sometimes skin has a lot of stretch marks, so there's just too much skin. And so you have this sort of the breast and the belly are the two main areas that women feel distressed about. And then they go on a big workout routine and they get in incredible shape, you know, and that's sort of the trend now. But there are areas that just don't seem to look the same. So a mommy makeover can really help with that. So very often we'll do a tummy tuck. And a breast augmentation or a breast lift with an augmentation at the same time. Sometimes we do the fat transfer like we talked about to the buttock. So mommy makeover can have all kinds of aspects with it.
Yeah, that's huge. And I think the big thing here, how soon after a delivery would you think that would be that a mommy makeover should be commenced?
Well, that's different for every person. I personally like to wait at least a year. It takes that long just for you to get back to a sense of normalcy, and to really not be in this sort of depressed mood about your body as well. I mean, I think, you know, you have to have a healthy outlook, and it also matters, you know, what are your plans for more children. If you plan on getting pregnant in another 6 months, maybe this isn't the best time to do it. But if you're stable, you don't think you're going to be having kids, at least not in the near future, then after a year, we could definitely start to look at things. But as you said, even some of the stretch marks, you know, there are some treatments, which I'm sure you do as well, you know, which some laser treatments that can improve the look of stretch marks. But if you're going to go and undergo a big procedure like a tummy tuck or a breast lift, which tend to be larger procedures, then I would wait at least a year.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think milder procedures certainly can be started maybe at about 3 months, but anything major, you'd be foolish to do it much sooner than a year. It just would be not the right way to do it. And again, if a person's thinking of having another baby right away, which my wife did frequently after with our kids, we ended up with four that way, it's not right to just plow ahead and do it right away.
No, it isn't. It really isn't. But I do want people to understand, because I think, and I have this issue a lot, because people, you know, they've had a C-section, and they know how much pain that was. So they often think, well, doc, this is going to be nothing. I had a C-section and everything is fine. But, you know, the fact of the matter is a tummy tuck, even, you know, what we call a mini tummy tuck, can be, you know, you need some recovery time. These are not small procedures, because what's involved is taking out some extra skin from the lower abdomen, but usually it also involves tightening the muscles of your abdomen, so cinching in that waist and giving you that really nice waistline and tightening the muscles in the midline so you have this beautiful flat tummy. But that can be a little uncomfortable. It can be very uncomfortable right afterwards. So it's not something that you want to plow into and then have to worry about carrying a one-year-old right after surgery. I always tell people, you know, you have to have someone at home that's willing to help for the week of recovery or 2 weeks. You need some assistance. I know you want your belly fixed, but there's plenty of time to do it. You have to make sure that you're ready to have a procedure is one of the bigger ones we do in plastic surgery. It's not a little thing.
Absolutely. I think that's huge. And I think the key with cosmetic surgery of any type, including the mummy makeover, the right timing, the right procedure, the right physician, and the right recovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, recovery is very important. With you know, I get people from sort of all over the tri-state area where I live. I'm in New Jersey, but I draw from New York and Pennsylvania. And with a tummy tuck, I will always have them, you know, stay in a hotel nearby. And I'm old school, so I still do house calls. So I'll go to their hotel room or their home if they live nearby, because it is a big thing. You know, the first couple of days, you can't even really get out of bed very well. But the results are so spectacular. And Barry, the best thing about this procedure, which I love, especially when it's someone who has gained some weight and they feel like they just don't look anything like themselves, it is an incredible motivator. You know, I have picture after picture of patients who, you know, all it meant was tightening up their belly a little bit, and you see them a year later and they look great, but you see them 2 years later and they look spectacular because they've had a different outlook about their body. Their breasts are perky, their waistline is tight, and they look better than they did even before they got pregnant. It's such a wonderful result, and it sort of clicks something in their head that just turns them on to a new level of fitness and watching their weight. And, you know, you go through something like that and it just motivates you to take it to the next level. And it's really something to watch. And I love showing those pictures to patients. And they're very proud of them. A lot of them post them on their own Facebook pages and stuff. And they just show themselves before and then after, but then where they've taken it themselves. So it really becomes a team effort between the surgeon and the patient. You know, how good can we make this result? And, you know, I like to think that, you know, I put you on the right road, but it's up to you to really take it to the next level. And it's very gratifying to see.
You know, and it really is a thing to be said about cosmetic surgery, where you can take a person to a place that they actually are better now than before their original surgery. That's huge.
I think it is, and I get a little upset when people say, oh, you know, it's just vanity. Well, you know what, it really, you know, there are some things we do that are just vanity, but I think most people are sitting in gyms. I mean, they're doing it more for vanity than because of longevity. So there's nothing wrong with a little vanity, but where it takes you is what's important. If the vanity becomes an obsession and all you want to do is, you know, look good at all costs, that's one thing. But for most of us, you know, being a little vain makes us carry ourselves better, makes us present ourselves better, makes us, you know, it's all about your appearance, but your appearance is important in the way you interact with the world around you. And if it makes you healthier at the same time, well, that's a plus for everybody.
That's very important. You know, when you and I probably started cosmetic surgery way back in our early thing, people were saying we sold out, that we really were doing this for reasons that were less than humanitarian, that they, you know, there was something noble about doing all the other things, but this was totally a different field.
Mm.
And now I think that's changed. I really think people really value this so much more, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I always said that there's very little difference between reconstructive surgery and cosmetic surgery. There's very similar techniques. It makes as profound a change in the way a person looks, but also in the way they feel about themselves. So I think that they are very, you know, the two sides of the same coin. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the modern day of cosmetic surgery is filled with great procedures. And probably the biggest, you know, we've spoken about this before, the most important thing is that you actually find somebody that believes that and treats it as such with the respect that it deserves. And I think, you know, the time I've known you, I know that you're one of those guys, and that's important. It is a specialty that should be respected not only by the public but by the people who perform it, and then you can get some pretty great results.
Absolutely. Well, Fred, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to do so?
Oh, I'd love to. By telephone, I can be reached at area code 609-957-5652. And on the web, we're cornerstoneplasticsurgery.com. I believe a foundational beauty, so that's why it's called Cornerstone. So cornerstoneplasticsurgery.com is probably the easiest way to get all my information. And I look forward to meeting or hearing from any of the patients out there.
Fred, thank you so much. It really was a pleasure talking to you again. It's always a great thing to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much, Barry, and you take good care of yourself.
You too, my friend. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Barry Leica here. I was talking with Fred Colville from New Jersey about newer procedures in cosmetic surgery. I think you should pay attention to them. And as you're traveling around in the world, finding new and better things, check back here often because you'll probably find this referenced here. Also, as you learn about new cosmetic surgery, if you have friends that need to know about cosmetic surgery, make sure they come here because we can help them. Make sure we can help educate them. We'd love to have new listeners, and we'd love to have your friends as well. Bye for now. Dr. Leica, have a great day.